Linoleum knife.
Yes.
Tell me why.
What was that and why was it that way?
That is the opening title music from City Slickers.
Great.
And not a movie that I love particularly, but I like the score a lot. And that came up recently.
Enough so that you put it on a cassette mixtape.
Yes.
Wait, what?
It's just a mixtape that it's not one of my year-end ones. It was just sort of a random thing.
The name of this mixtape.
That's not the name of the mixtape.
It's not?
No.
Give me the case. Where's the case?
This is what the mixtape is called.
The name of this mixtape is Too Many May Birthdays, Spring 1992 Compilation.
Yes.
You're jazzy with the titles.
Uh-huh. So yeah, so you were going to be all mocky about the fact that I had this, and you were going to play it 1 week to sort of try and shame me. But I am not shamed.
Right. I forgot. I was totally going to do that.
I am not shamed. So I'm playing it myself because you're a tool, and it's a good score. And
I forgot.
Shut up, Dave White.
I forgot.
That's why I'm playing it.
I forgot about that. I remember we were washing dishes,
mm-hmm.
and you had this tape in.
Yes.
And this stupid piece of music came up. And I said, why are we now listening to some movie's soundtrack, which I knew, obviously, it was. And then you explained to me what it was.
Yeah.
And then I said that I was going to play it mm-hmm. on the show to prove to people that you put this kind of dumb stuff on a
right.
compilation tape. Wait
well,
a second.
That's
the beginning of the...
No. You do not get to read out what I put on a compilation in 1992.
I want to see
fair.
What follows it.
No.
What follows it on the tape?
Nope.
I'm going to find out right now what follows it on the tape. Oh, give me back the tape.
I have the tape, too.
Give me back the tape.
You'll never know.
I want to know. Show me. Give me.
No.
Give me.
Mm-mm. You're Dave White, film critic for movies.com.
I bet it's that remix of U2's Pride in the Name of Love. Like the ravey version that you like so much. God, this is what it's like living in this house. Because every time he does the dishes, the dishwasher, the person, we don't have a dishwashing machine. We
right.
have
us
a sink. And we have a really, really cool dish rack that makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah.
It's a very, very fancy, awesome
designy
dish rack. And maybe I'll post a picture of it on the Linoleum Knife.
Because people are dying to know.
I know people are excited to see it now. Whatever. They're stoked to find out what this could even possibly look like.
Okay.
But dishwasher picks the music.
Mm-hmm.
Dish dryer gets to deal with the music. But dishwasher gets to pick
yeah.
the music.
So whenever I come home and Dave White is washing dishes.
Because the cassettes, as you may know, you've listened to long enough, maybe long enough. The cassettes are in the kitchen, and so is the cassette player.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dave White is either listening to some, like, horrifying...
Well, I can only listen to that stuff when you're not home.
No, I know, and I appreciate that you do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so I want the credit
okay.
for not subjecting you,
you
to
do.
It.
You do. You're very... I have trained you over the years.
Yeah, I am
but
listening
I,
to...
Some sort of horrible, bone-crunching, you know, Norwegian black metal, or... Decapods. And so I don't want to hear any complaints.
Decapods are so great.
I don't want to hear any complaints about my old 80s and 90s cassettes. And you're saying, I thought about this.
With the soundtrack from City Slickers.
Yeah, fine. Yeah. I don't care. Yeah. You know, you were giving, those are stuck in the 80s with cassettes. That's like looking at somebody's 8-track collection saying, man, all this stuff's from the 1970s. Well, yeah, that's when you had 8-tracks. All my cassettes are from the 80s and 90s because that's when I made cassettes and listened to cassettes.
I've got new cassettes.
Yeah, because you buy these stupid metal things that are only available on cassette or on, like, you know, 45s or some, you know, outmoded media. Nobody downloads the stuff you listen to.
Nobody can tell me I'm wrong. But I'm telling you
you're
wrong.
I do it every day.
I'm telling you you're wrong.
I do it every day.
City Slickers.
You're so wrong. Close that thing.
Soundtrack. I'm running with the shadows of the night.
Shh.
I don't know what you're doing.
Uh-huh. You're on the escalator of life.
This is still a little...
Yes, yes it is.
I'm Dave White.
And I'm alone.
I am for movies.com.
Yes.
And I'm totally famous this week for being on KCRW Los Angeles.
That's true.
Los Angeles' biggest national public radio station. Mm. I'm on it this week, but I'll talk about that at the end.
You brought it up.
We're plugging things. Well. I know, but I'm just feeling very excited about it.
Well, let's just say welcome to any new listeners who may have found this show because they listened to your thing on KCRW.
They did. That didn't happen.
Well, they posted a link.
They did post a link on KCRW. This is why I brought it up, because it's linked on my page on KCRW. But we'll get to that at the end, because I don't want to. We're here to talk about cinema. The liveliest art.
Thank you, Arthur Knight.
Yeah.
That was actually a really important book at the time, apparently.
Was it?
Yeah. Okay. It was sort of one of the first, you know, to kind of, in the United States, to sort of treat it as an art form.
Oh.
Anyway, so what's arty this week? The Ides of March.
Ides of March, Real Steel, Dirty Girl, Human Centipede 2, Full Sequence. And I also have to talk about Courageous, because that was last week's, and I didn't get to see it until Monday and turned the review in. The review is now up at movies.com if you want to go look at my review of Courageous, which was one of the biggest grossing movies of last week. It was like number four out of top 10. It made a bajillion dollars.
They know how to send those people out to fill seats.
Yeah.
And I will be talking about Toast. And if no one's mentioned it, I'm Alonzo Duralde. I'm the film critic for TheWrap.com.
You got to mention it yourself. No one's going to do it for
you. And the Young Turks Network's What the Flick on YouTube.
All right, well, I would like to know about Toast.
Really? We're going to start with that?
I want to start with Toast, because what's really on my mind, besides plugging my show appearance on KCRW, is... I have to figure out what to make for dinner tonight. It is Sunday.
I see.
And I have to make Sunday dinner, but I don't know what I want to make.
Well, okay. Toast is...
I would fall back on the old reliables, like a pork loin.
Uh-huh.
Nobody doesn't like the pork
loin. Heck no.
But, you know, I like to...
You like to mix it up.
Try new things. I like to push, you know, things forward.
Toast is based on the memoirs of... A real person whose name I'm now forgetting. Nigel something.
That's his last name. Something.
Nigel something.
Something on time.
Nigel Summit. anyway, and it's about him sort of his growing up, his kind of relationship to food. His mother is sort of
dead.
Not immediately. But she's in the first part of the film, and she's like the worst cook imaginable. Like she's afraid of fresh produce. She doesn't trust the pork pies in the store. So all she ever makes is stuff in cans. And she doesn't even, like, take it out of the can. She, like, heats it up in the boiling water in the can, and then, like, overcooks everything, and it's all just gross. And so, ultimately, when something's just gone really horribly wrong, she makes toast, and she makes toast really well. And the kid, obviously, you know, is like already sort of dreaming about like his dad catches him under the covers, you know, making oohing, ahing sounds.
Making noises like he's jaying it.
Yeah, but he's actually reading a cookbook.
Yeah.
And so he tries to make spaghetti bolognese, but nobody in the house trusts it, and they think
nobody wants it.
Yeah, they all think it's dodgy.
That's a British word.
What?
Dodgy.
Dodgy, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then the mother dies, and
what if I made butter burgers?
Ooh, we haven't had those this year.
We haven't had them this year, and we get them once a year.
We allow ourselves once a year to have butter burgers.
What if we had butter burgers?
That would be awesome.
It would be pretty great, wouldn't it?
Anyway, so the mother dies, and and Helena Bonham Carter shows up as like the new cleaning lady, and she cooks, and she seduces the dad. And so since she's still married, and she and the dad are sort of having this sort of scandalous relationship, they move way out to the country where nobody knows them. And the kid, you know, who is clearly gay, like they've sort of shown that he had kind of a crush on the gardener, you know, kind of grows up to be Freddie Highmore, who is in his shot up like a weed phase. Like he's suddenly like this tall, skinny,
he's like 9 feet tall now,
gangly thing.
What was that crappy movie he was in just this past?
Homework? No. The Art of Getting By.
The Art of Getting By.
It's called Homework at Sundance. Awful.
Terrible movie.
Anyway, so then in this one, he's in school and he starts taking, you know, he's like the only boy in home economics, and he starts learning how to make all this stuff. And you can tell that, like, he thinks he's going to compete with Helena Bonham Carter for the dad's affection by trying to outcook her. And they sort of set that up like that's going to be a plot thing, but she sort of is too smart for him and, like, is, like, you know, she'll feed the dad earlier in the day so he's too full to try the pie that the son made, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Clever.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, I don't want to give away the whole ending.
The
but
end.
Not much happens, frankly, in this movie. Like it feels
he
like
he grows up to be a cook and a writer.
He grows up to be a cook and a writer. Yeah, but it feels like they're setting up.
And he's a real dude, Nigel.
He's a real guy, Nigel. Whatever.
Something
his name
on Tyne.
Yes,
I'm gonna look him up right now.
Nigel St. John something. But the movie feels like it keeps setting up a plot that it never really pursues. So maybe I just went in expecting something else because it's very sort of episodic and meandering and it doesn't really go anywhere. But, you know, they get a lot of the period details feel right. I mean, you know, the feeling like of what a British grocery store and the super drab of that period would have looked like.
In the 1960s.
Like. Yeah. And, you know, the food all looks great. Like, I mean, not the mother's awful cooking, but like when Helena Bonham Carter starts whipping out these, you know, sage stuffed turkeys and, you know, crown roasts and if you're a lemon meringue pie fan, you know, this will be porn for you. But yeah, I don't know. I just kind of felt like it didn't ever really amount to anything.
Will people make the ooh and ah noises like they're, are people going to jay it to this movie?
To the lemon meringue pie? Maybe. Yeah. So I don't know. I found it ultimately kind of disappointing. And
Nigel Slater.
Slater, thank you.
He's a food writer. He's a journalist, and apparently he presents television.
He does a lot
food television shows in England.
In England, right? Yeah. So yeah, but I don't know. And Helena Bonham Carter just
so they have a Nigel and they have a Nigella.
They do
over there.
They do
with the food.
Helena Bonham Carter.
I've already chosen my side.
Yes, I'm totally Team Nigella all the way. Yeah. I bet a movie about her life would be way more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did an A&E special about her life.
Oh, yeah?
It was like a documentary special.
And why did I not see this?
I don't know. It was pretty good. I mean, it talks about how like her dad was like this conservative Thatcher government official.
So you ate the whole thing by yourself and didn't share it with me?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
What are you surprised?
I guess not. Mm-mm. No.
Don't be. That's what happens around this house.
Mm.
I eat.
Yeah.
I eat it up.
So yeah, so Toast, you know, I wanted to like it more. It sounded like it was up my alley, and it was just kind of, yeah.
The Los Angeles Times disagrees with you, because well, that's the review I looked up
and
to.
And that is their right.
The review I looked up to find out his actual name, it says...
who watcher for the Times?
It's sweet and tart, airy and rich, and above all, a thoroughly irresistible confection. So the writer used a lot of food descriptions to describe the movie.
Block that metaphor.
Yeah. What? Who wrote the review?
Yeah.
Somebody named Gary Goldstein. Do you know who that is? I don't know who he is. I'm sure he's a nice guy.
I'm sure he is. And knows his cookbook terminology. anyway, let's go on to the big movies that people actually care about.
Human Centipede 2.
No. All right,
that's
fine.
That's a big movie this week.
Let's get that one out of the way. I didn't see it. I will never see it. Let's just be clear about that.
Diarrhea, diarrhea, diarrhea,
mm-hmm.
diarrhea, diarrhea,
yes.
diarrhea, diarrhea, but then diarrhea, 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 and then finally diarrhea.
Oh, okay. So at least it's consistent.
So yeah, that's Human Centipede 2.
In a nutshell. In a colostomy bag, as it were.
Mm-hmm. The premise is that Human Centipede 1 is only a movie. It's only a movie.
Only a movie.
Only a movie. Only a movie. And then there's this dude who's obsessed with it and a crazy person and mute. And he's grown up being physically and sexually assaulted and abused by both of his parents his entire life.
Oh, Jesus.
His father is dead or gone or whatever. And his mother, he lives with his mother who's still just horrible. And
so he's British precious.
Awful. Yeah. But far more like no fighting back other than going out and murdering tons of people.
And creating a human centipede.
He works in a... He's a parking lot attendant. The performance by this guy, Lawrence Harvey, who's a British performance artist.
Lawrence Harvey?
That's his name. Yes.
With a U or a W?
A U.
Really?
Yeah.
So he spells it exactly the way the 60s film.
Yes. Yes.
Creepy.
That's his name. He's a British
performance... Does he know Steve McQueen?
I guarantee you that he does. Just... Off the top of my head, I'm going to say that they know each other.
Okay.
Steve McQueen being the...
Director of Hunger and the upcoming Shame.
The artist, the British artist who's the filmmaker. You just made me blank.
Lawrence Harvey.
He's a British performance artist and children's television performer. This is great. He he, you know, he's obsessed with making his own Human Centipede with 12 people.
Sure, as one does.
But unlike in the first movie, he's not a mad scientist who's clinically trained to perform surgery. So now, this movie, he just uses hammers and hacksaws and duct tape and staple guns.
Yeah.
And everything that you didn't see in the first movie, you totally see in this movie. So the DIY surgery, you see it. The smashing out people's teeth with hammers, you see it. The ripping up of faces and butt cheeks to staple them together and then duct tape it all together, you see it. And then he injects everybody with big laxatives, and so they all go in each other's mouths and faces, and it splatters all over the camera and the faces and the floor and the bodies. And the and then there's one of the ladies is pregnant, and she gives birth, and then... I had a good time. I had a good time watching this movie.
Because you are a sick mofo.
I like extreme gore. I'm not ever going to apologize for that. I like extreme gore. And I like to see how creative a filmmaker can be.
I want to break this down a little because I've never really asked you. Yeah. Do you like extreme gore because you're constantly reminding yourself that it's fake? And so you're sort of just impressed at the Grand Guignol, whatever, like all the excessive it all,
Mr. Senor Duralde,
or is it just that you just, I mean, because I know you like surgery shows, so clearly you don't, it doesn't have to be fake for you.
No, the more real, the more I like it.
I see.
Yeah.
Is it like your
short of watching? I do not want to watch people really getting their heads cut off by terrorists on the internet. No. I don't want to watch that.
Thank you.
Because that's sad in real life.
Do you feel like you're testing yourself when you watch this stuff?
In fake land of the movies, mm-hmm. it's fun to watch people become dismembered.
Because
it's great to look at the whole, like,
but
it's like watching stop motion animation and thinking, wow, look what they did.
Okay, you know, so you're responding to the actual theatricality of it, the effort it required.
Also, I just like point of contact violence.
Okay.
I want the face to be punched, and I want to see the face being punched with a fist, a real one, on a real face. And
my husband, ladies and gentlemen.
And so, look, don't turn this gay. Keep your agenda somewhere else. All right. We're talking about important things right now. Centipedes. Human ones.
Now, doesn't...
And
I can't believe I'm going to ask this, but doesn't this also involve...
We were discussing the Christmas version of this movie yesterday. The human centipede.
Don't knees get crushed or something in all this?
Yeah. He chops the tendons out of their knees to make it so they can't get up and walk away. They have to stay put. And it's disgusting.
So basically, this movie exists to make you admire the restraint of the original human centipede.
Yes,
is that the thing?
Yes. And it's just the grossest, most disgusting movie that I have seen all year, maybe in the past few years. And I will say that I appreciate whatever little, you know, whatever the point is he's trying to make. Like, and I get the point. I'm not going to call it a little point. I think it's a valid point. The idea that horror creates violence. The idea that horror movies can set in motion the idea of a copycat killer. You know,
but aren't filmmakers,
someone can take their cues from a horror movie
but aren't
and
filmmakers,
go out and do this real
aren't
thing.
Aren't filmmakers always denying that that's a connection and that
yes.
it's, that that's
and
an
so
easy out?
What Tom Six has done is he has made a film about his own film inspiring a copycat killer. And so he's rubbing it in the faces of the people who decry horror films as fuel for actual real-life unstable people. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he's literally made a how-to film. Like, if you were a genuinely deranged person and you watched both of these Human Centipede movies, you would become inspired by the first one. And then the second one would show you step by step how to accomplish the task with hammers, hacksaws, duct tape, and staple.
So wait, you're saying that he's denying...
And injectable laxatives.
So you're saying he's trying to deny the argument?
He wants to have it both ways.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because okay. he's a provocateur.
No. Oh,
yeah,
Mr. White.
Provocateur.
Monsieur Blanc.
Sorry, I was just drinking my tea. Sorry for the food noises there. Food, anti-food noise people. I'm never going to let y'all off the hook for ruining my podcasting life by not letting me
eat chips
on the mic.
You could eat. I'm
drinking my tea.
That brownie would be totally quiet.
I'm drinking my tea. That's what I'm doing. I'm drinking my tea.
On the show. All
right. It's nasty. It is a nasty, nasty, nasty movie. Here's my favorite thing. I'm watching this movie in a press screening, in a tiny little press screening room. Now, I can describe this person pretty accurately, because I guarantee you, this person is never going to listen to this podcast. This person doesn't even understand probably what a podcast is.
Is this the lady of a certain age?
There's a lady. There is a lady who is always
at the press screenings
that I go to. And
she does not have an inside voice.
She's older. I don't know who she writes for.
If anyone.
But she's at all these press screenings. She has what you just said. She has no indoor voice.
Were you there for the time she was talking about frozen salmon?
And talks. Yes. Oh. That was great. She talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks. And
Not during the movie. Before, though.
Before. And you always get to hear everything she's saying to her equally old companions. And I find these conversations fascinating. I like listening to her go on and on about the sale on salmon at the supermarket that she found. But when I walked in to the screening and I saw her there, my first thought was, what the F are you doing?
At Human Centipede
2. Human Centipede 2.
And full sequence.
At one point in the movie, they screened it for us digitally. And the disc started skipping. And I don't know if you've ever witnessed this in a digital screening, but this disc started skipping. And the image started going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth through the, like, it would go up, it would skip ahead 5 minutes, it would go back 5 minutes, it was just screwing up, it was crazy. So they had to stop, and they had to clean the machine or wipe off the whatever dust was,
If there's any movie whose images I wouldn't want to see more than once.
I don't know what they have to do to fix it, but they had to fix it. Okay. So the lights come up, and we're all just sitting around, you know. And she says out loud, big voice, of course, to her companion, you know, it just goes to show, makes you think about, who really wants to pay money to see this kind of thing? What audience is out there for this kind of movie? Who in their right mind pays money to actually see this? What kind of person does that? And I stood there and I thought to myself, me? I paid money to see The Human Centipede after seeing it at a press screening. I went with Aaron and Gardner, our friends. I went with them to a midnight screening of it at the New Art. I bought a ticket. And then I watched it again on Netflix before I had to interview Ashlyn Yenny, who in the first Human Centipede was the tail end. She was the back third. And I'm going to blank on his name. Akita, I think is his first name. I'm blank. The Japanese dude whose name I'm forgetting. I interviewed them with Gray on the Popcorn Mafia podcast.
Right.
And so I've seen that movie three times. And I just, you know what? I held my tongue, obviously. I held my tongue because I'm just like, I'm not going to get into it with this lady because there's no reasoning, obviously. There's no reasoning with her. And the people who think that these movies are like post-human in some way and that no human being should like own up to enjoying them and nobody should like them, and if you do, there's something wrong with you. You can't argue with those people.
No,
trying to argue about religion with somebody.
Yeah. I don't believe that. I know I do not want to see them.
That's right.
But I have, if other people want to, you know, knock yourself out. Go crazy.
Diarrhea.
God. Yeah. Okay.
What's our next movie to discuss?
Shall we move on to the movies that people actually saw this weekend?
People have seen The Human Centipede. I am looking on my Facebook.
Well, but it opened in like, what, two cities?
I don't know, but it's available, I think, on demand.
Oh, is it? Is it?
I think. Because people on my Facebook wall are talking about it.
Okay.
Like they're going to see it. I'm going to sneeze now.
Okay. Gesundheit.
All right.
I was going to say something about all the old lady, but I'm...
I'm sure we'll talk about her again.
No doubt.
Sometime in the future, she because will, she's always
she's
around.
A constant source of fascination. Okay, well, the big movie this weekend, sad to say, is Real Steel.
When you say it's the big movie this weekend, is it's
box office number one.
What's it making?
Apparently, I don't remember the numbers, but Nikki Fink said it's the... it's, you know, on a slow weekend, it was the number one movie.
Hmm.
And it stinks on ice, except for the special effects, which are admittedly pretty damn good in terms of they look like real robots and it feels like...
They made actual
there
robots.
It's a mix of models and CG or whatever, yeah. But... You know, it never
and it's seamless.
Yeah, it never feels like suddenly you're watching something that's fake. Like it always looks like a real thing. So on that front, yes, well done. But oh boy, when the robot fights stop and you have to deal with the characters and the human beings and the who cares, it's pretty dreadful.
And the who cares.
Yes. You know, it's directed by Sean Levy, who I think is one of the worst filmmakers working today. He's the guy behind such classics as the Pink Panther remake with Steve Martin and the Cheaper by the Dozen remake with Steve Martin and the Night at the Museum and all these other movies that I just despise.
They're boring and terrible.
Yeah. But, you know, they make money, and so he keeps getting work. And now, I want you to address this because you were a bigger fan of this than I am. What does it say about the American public and the movie going...
I was a bigger fan of what?
I'm getting to that.
Oh.
What does it say about the movie going public when a movie like Warrior tanks and a movie like Real Steel is a huge hit?
It says that the American public knows what Hugh Jackman is. They know that he is Wolverine. And they know what robots are because they like Transformers. And so they think Wolverine is going to fight a robot. Sure, let's go. But when you give them Warrior, they go, I don't know that dude, and I don't know that other dude, and I don't know what this kind of boxing is they're doing, and maybe I'll watch it on cable someday, but I'm not going to risk my money on that. They don't listen to critics. You think they listen to critics?
Obviously not. Because they're both movies about fighting. They're both movies about family dynamics. Obviously, you know, Real Steel is more aimed towards little kids than Warrior is.
It's entirely aimed at little kids. Yeah. It's a kid movie. It's a children's film.
Yeah. But the kid is horrible.
I have heard, now, I agree with you, but I heard the very next night from more than one person that they thought that kid was entirely winning.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. I thought that was one of the smarmiest, like...
Child actoriest
performances since those supporting characters in Judy Moody and the Not Bummer Summer. Like, so, like, phony and unctuous and you know, sass mouth, you know, and
yeah,
that sort
of sass
fakey
mouth.
And that
he's an obnoxious kid. He's got, he says
way.
Swears, too.
Yeah, I, you know.
In case your parents out there and you don't want, you know, a precedent set with your 10-year-old running around saying the, you know.
And it's
the ish word and the GD word.
It's PG-13 because there's a scene where like loan sharks beat up Hugh Jackman and they punch the kid some too. And I was like, hit him again.
They do punch the kid. I thought that was kind of funny when they punched the kid.
Take him down. Sick of him.
Now, in defense of the kid, Hugh Jackman is worse.
Yeah. Hugh Jackman is... I once described Matthew McConaughey as oleaginous in a review, and
that's a good word.
Hugh Jackman is in that territory.
He's getting there. I used to like him.
Yeah,
and I'm growing tired of. I don't think he cares. I don't think he cares about anything. I think he's getting to the point where he just, you know, accepts a
hefty paycheck,
And a script that is not demanding, and I think that he doesn't care. That's how it feels to me. There's just nothing really going on with him right now. I don't feel like I'm seeing him be an actor.
Yeah, no. It's
the Wolverine movie was bad. This is bad.
It's very I'm here. It's so sort of self-satisfied and
loves taking off his shirt to show you all the Wolverine muscles.
Training.
Yeah.
And poor Evangeline Lilly gets stuck with being the girl.
And has a line. I got to go back to it. Wait, hang on. Because before we get talk about Evangeline Lilly, which there's really not much to say about.
No, like, no. Evangeline just that she's ill. I've never watched Lost. I don't know her skills as an actress, but I can say she is ill used in this film.
One no matter line what of dialogue in this film that really just got stuck in my throat in a pretty big way.
In your craw?
Yeah. He's about to fight some guys. In an alley. And he says, after he punches one of them, he says to the other one, "One more step and I'll drop you like your girlfriend." Did you catch that? It's near the beginning of the film. After he's laid out one of these dudes, he's going to punch the other one.
It vaguely rings a bell.
He says, "One more step and I'll drop you like your girlfriend."
Right.
Now, that's a mouthful for a guy who everyone thinks is gay and who
allegedly.
And I didn't say he was. I said everyone thinks he's gay. All right.
Yes.
And he talks about those rumors in interviews, addresses them openly. "Oh, everyone thinks I'm gay. Well, ha ha. Guess what? Here's my wife manager."
Who's older than me.
Who's much older than me, and yeah. I don't like that. I don't like it the same way I don't like it when Travolta goes down that sort of, like, you know, homophobic road.
Wait, why is drop you like your girlfriend homophobic?
Because he's calling the other guy that he just laid out on the ground hit the girlfriend.
Oh, see,
are you not getting?
I read that line as "I'll drop you the way your girlfriend dropped you."
No. I'll drop you like your girlfriend, the guy that I just laid out on the ground.
Okay. I wasn't clear on that.
Stay up. Well, no, keep up.
I read it differently.
You know? Well, you read it wrong.
Well, okay, fine. But yeah, you're right.
There's no girlfriend around. We don't know who these people are. Well, they're just thugs that are getting him in an alley.
Okay, well then, yes.
He's talking about the other guy.
That is obnoxious.
It's obnoxious. And
especially for someone whose production partner for a long time was, you know, there.
Yeah. So,
not that we're saying anything about Hugh Jackman's private life.
I think that's obnoxious.
It is. I didn't catch that at all.
And you don't get to earn points by saying, "Well, I played Peter Allen on Broadway." No, you don't. You don't get to earn those points. Yeah. You don't get to play with that stuff by saying stuff like that.
It would be obnoxious enough if someone with actual unassailable heterosexual credentials said it.
Yeah. You don't get to dance around the idea that you might actually not be heterosexual,
especially if you're dancing around it in a dance belt.
Yeah, you don't get to do that. And I'm saying this as the person who cannot be offended by virtually any anti-gay anything. Like, it doesn't bother me until
it's true. You are a homophobe.
Until the person who is rumored to be gay a lot starts doing that in public, then I want to punch you in the Wolverine face.
We call it protesting too much.
Yeah. So I'm not down for that. This movie is boring. It's very boring. There are some funny punk rock people in the movie.
all the
fight audiences in this movie are like, they've got mohawks and nose rings and pink
because
hair.
It's the future of 2020.
Yeah, it's the future, and everyone is you know. As I said in my review, everyone is on an Escape from New York themed episode of Blossom.
I was reminded of, remember Warrior of the Lost World on Mystery Science Theater, where he goes into that junkyard and he has to fight like all the different sort of warrior style theme gangs.
Yeah.
That's what they reminded me of.
So that was funny. But the thing is, none of our boredom with this matters because it's not
for us.
It's not for us. It's for children. And a kid movie either succeeds or fails based on how well it communicates to those kids that are watching it. And kids love it in a movie when the kid has the power.
Right.
When the kid is the hero, when the kid shows the adults that he was right all along.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in this movie.
He makes himself invaluable.
The kid finds the junkyard robot. The kid trains the robot. The kid teaches the robot to dance. You know, Hugh Jackman finds his mojo again and teaches the robot to box properly. And, you know, they become a family. And
Oh, and poor Hope Davis.
Everybody runs around yelling things like, deal with it. And let's do this.
I got this.
And bring the pain. Go for it. Yeah. You know, nothing interesting happening on screen. Gray loved it. I don't know what.
Oh, we have to talk about that. We have to have words. Hope Davis, I mean, granted, I hope she got a big fat paycheck out of this because, you know, she deserves one in general.
She had to work for like 3 days.
Yeah.
She got a week's worth of good pay.
But she makes a lot of indies that are great and that I'm sure she gets scale. So right. I hope this was, you know, a nice, cushy, you know, covered my taxes for last year check because, ugh, she deserves way better than this malarkey. Also opening this week is The Ides of March.
Yep, Ides of March.
Which is way better. You know John August, the screenwriter?
Remind me.
He did Go and The Nines, and I think he wrote some of the, like, he wrote Big Fish and I think maybe Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay.
Anyway, he tweeted how he really liked The Ides of March and Weekend separately, but that, like, he goes, the thought of mashing them up seems really sexy.
I don't get it.
So, like, if you had Weekend with, you know, but starring George Clooney and Ryan Gosling.
It wouldn't make any sense.
Oh, never mind.
That wouldn't make sense. That wouldn't be the movie. It wouldn't be the same movie.
Well, obviously, but it's...
Because you wouldn't be looking at these guys.
That's the point of
a Weekend, the guys, you've never seen these guys before. Right. You believe them. It could almost be a documentary. These guys are just these guys. Okay, you don't bring any other stuff to it.
The idea of a mashup, though, is that you mix and match.
And anyway, now we're back to Jane it over a cookbook.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Ides of March, based on the play Farragut North, which I actually saw a couple years ago when it played at the Geffen with Chris Pine in the Ryan Gosling role and Chris Noth in the...
Noth or Noth?
Noth? I think it's Chris Noth. Noth? Okay, Chris Noth. In the, strangely enough, Philip Seymour Hoffman role.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
Usually, you know, in the when something goes from stage to screen, it's, you know, in the opposite direction.
Philip Seymour Hoffman to Chris Noth.
Yeah.
Right.
And the Clooney character isn't even in the play. Like, he's you never meet the candidate.
Really?
He's always, yeah. Here's the thing.
Play just have two characters?
No. Oh, there's, okay. You know, the reporter and there's the other, you know, there's a bunch of people. But when we talked about this on What the Flick, when I first saw the trailer for The Ides of March, I was like, oh my God, they're giving away everything. Like, this is the entire story.
Right.
It's the entire story of the play.
Oh, I see.
Not the entire story of the movie, which goes in a whole, you know, which kind of builds on the original, you know, structure and goes off into these other directions and does it effectively. I have to say, I mean, I liked the play, but I like what the movie does. You know, you can sort of call into question some of the, you know, would this person do that and wouldn't he know better than the blah, blah, blah. But I thought it was really cool. Anyway, the movie...
Ryan Gosling plays a campaign press secretary.
Yeah.
And
he's young and he's ambitious and...
And he's like the hot shot of the campaign and... he's, you know,
George Clooney.
He can't do anything wrong.
George Clooney's a governor who's running for president,
right?
And
and then they pour battery acid on Ryan Gosling's soul. And at first, it's just a little drip, 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 drip. But then by the end of the movie, he's taking a bath in it. Yeah. And I'm not going to tell you any of the events or the incidents that lead up to this, but there are people who are out to get him on many levels. There are potholes that he steps in by himself. There are interns and they are female and that's always bad in movies like this.
There are politicians who are not entirely what they seem to be or as, you know, not necessarily living up to the ideals that they profess to have.
And people are on the phone all the time.
Yes, lots of that.
There's so many phone calls, so many phone conversations. It's like pillow talk with the conversation. All the phone calls in the world are happening at the same time in this movie. And George Clooney, as the director, has the camera up everybody's nostrils during all the phone calls. Hmm. You see the pores on the face of every single human being in this movie, and they're all acting, acting, acting with their face, is pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I walked out of it going, wow, that was awesome.
It's a solid.
But it's solid. It's a grown-up, serious grown-up movie for serious grown-ups. And it wants you to have already known that, it wants you to already know that politics are corrupt and everyone is awful before you come into the movie.
Right.
It understands that, and it will not
dissuade you of that once you get into it.
It understands that you already understand that the past 30 years of American politics have been misery on one level or another. Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, misery. And I like that because depending on people's political affiliations, they go, oh, it was so great in the 80s when we had, you know, Grandpa Reagan running the show and then, you know, oh, that bad Bill Clinton and then that disappointing George Bush and then oh Hitler. Black Hitler.
If you are Hank Williams Jr.
is, you know, yeah, if you're Hank Williams Jr., Black Hitler is now the president. Or if you're a liberal, like some podcasters.
The 80s were a horror show.
You think the 80s were a horror show and Clinton was a disappointment. And then there were more. There was another horror show. And now there's another disappointment. Either way, no matter what your political affiliation, you can go into the Ides of March and agree with it.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, the thing about the Ides of March, I mean, the candidate is a Democrat, but the plot is nonpartisan. I mean, yeah. No matter what side you're approaching things from, you will find something to take out of it. Yeah. Dirty Girl.
Yeah, Dirty Girl. Why don't you talk about Dirty Girl?
Okay.
Because you liked it.
Yeah.
And I...
Not so much.
Thought it was okay.
It's a bit of a Shaggy movie. I mean, it's a first-time filmmaker, Abe Sylvia. And, it's... In my review on the wrap, I talked about how, like, you know... In the way that like a novice cake decorator will sort of patch over a mistake with like, you know, a floret, you know, he'll throw in a really good 80s pop song when things are lulling or, you know, there's kind of, he's up against the wall.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I thought it was cute and it's fun. It's about a...
Keep talking.
What is that?
Keep talking.
It's about, it's set in Norman, Oklahoma in 1987. this was the podcast lagging? Did we need to throw a pop?
This is what we lacked.
The class sort of tramp, basically, is this girl Danielle, played by Juno Temple, and her slutty ways get her thrown into the remedial class, where she meets Clark, who is this overweight and very quiet closet case. And the two of them sort of bond and realize that their home lives are getting crappy. Her mom, played by Mila Jovovich, wants to marry this Mormon, played by William H. Macy. And his dad, Dwight Yoakam, wants to throw him into military school. So the two of them take Dwight Yoakam's car and his credit card and decide to run out to California, where they find out that Danielle's long-lost father is living. And so it's a road trip movie and, you know, self-discovery and friendship and blah blah blah, but it's, you know, I thought it was cute. It never lags, it never lulls. It keeps moving along. There are some fun performances in it. Juno Temple is terrific.
Juno Temple is good.
You know,
I will say, I believe Juno Temple is probably going to be famous.
Yeah, and I think this is the best Mila Jovovich performance I can remember seeing ever. You know, and they kind of have fun with sort of the 80s-ness of it, the outfits and the music and stuff. And
the movie begins with Pat Benatar's Shadows of the Night.
Yeah.
Before you see anything on screen, it's a black screen and you're hearing Shadows of the Night.
And didn't your spine tingle just a little?
Yeah, because you know what? That song is rad. Yes. And I'm currently looking at the video for Shadows of the Night.
Where she's a World War II pilot?
She's a World War II pilot.
I remember
flying
that
in the Midnight Angel plane.
Yes.
And Judge Reinhold is in the video. And
the 80s.
So expansive and expensive this video was, with swastikas all over the place.
Probably cost more than Dirty Girl did.
And, you start your movie with Shadows of the Night, you better bring bring it through the whole movie. Keep me as excited as I am when I am listening to Shadows of the Night. But I was not. It was cute in times. I had a real problem with the framing device. A really big problem with
the flower device. Sack baby?
The flower sack baby that they have to take care of on their thing. And then there's the voiceover diary narrated by the flower sack.
Well, it's Juno Temple writing the diary for the assignment.
It doesn't matter.
From the perspective of the flower sack.
Yes. And every time they cut to the flower sack, it's got a new face that's sharpied onto it that no one has sharpied onto it. It's making those faces on its own. It is a magic bag of flour.
And well, but no one sees them but us.
I don't care. We cut to a magic bag of flour reaction shot in every scene. Almost every scene. Mm. Cuts to the magic bag of flour reacting.
It's the dog of this movie.
with like surprise face or sad face or crying face or scared face, bag of magic flour. And by the end of it, I was so angry at the bag of magic flour. And I wish they had spent more time on these people instead of the GD magic bag of flour.
That's a fair critique.
I was so frustrated by the time it was over. The kid, the boy,
Jeremy Dozier.
He's fine, I guess. I'm not super into him.
He is so believable as this character.
I don't know if
he can really act or not, or he's just this guy.
Well, if he isn't that guy in real life, then he's a pretty good actor.
Yeah.
But if he is that guy in real life,
we will never hear from him.
Then I don't know where he goes next in his career. Maybe many places. Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe a lot of places. But I just, I wanted it to be funnier. I wanted it to be meaner, sharper, faster, you've got a low budget, so make up for that with a really awesome script. And it's cute. It's very cute. I don't like cute.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, look, it's a movie, I will admit, it's a movie I was charmed by. I'm not going to say it's great cinema, but I was always entertained.
I
had fun.
And one of the producers is one of my Facebook friends. I just found out because I saw his name in the credits and I was like, I know that name. Isn't he my Facebook friend? And then I saw him on Facebook and I was like, oh, he's my Facebook friend. Oh, I have to review this movie. And I can't lie.
I can't
pretend that I liked it more than I did.
I did a Q&A with Abe Sylvia at Outfest, but I had already seen the movie and I had already liked the movie. So,
yeah. But it's not miserable.
No.
Believe me, I've seen some miserable stuff this week. I saw Fireflies in the Garden, which I'm going to talk about next week when it opens. That movie is a disaster, but I'll save that one for later. So compared to Fireflies in the Garden, there's a big Julia Roberts movie.
Right. Well, it's not big, but...
little Julia Roberts movie.
It's much more fun than that.
Way more fun than Fireflies in the Garden. I also saw Courageous.
Yes, Captain.
This week, the Christian cop movie.
Not to be confused with the Christian fireman movie with Kirk Cameron that came out last year or 2 years ago or whenever. Which was called what?
Religious Fireproof.
Fireproof.
Religious movies are deeply strange. In my review of Courageous, I talk about God's Army.
Right.
Which is a movie from 2000, which is a Mormon.
Where Mormon missionaries make a crippled guy walk because they pray over him.
In 2004, spoiler, an Orthodox Jewish film came out called Ushpizin, where an Orthodox Jewish couple, they pray to God for a boy child. And then during the Sukkot. I don't know how you, Sukkoth holiday. Yeah. I don't know how you pronounce it. Sukkot or Sukkot. It's not suck it. That you can't possibly.
I think it might be suck it.
No, it can't be called that.
And not suck it.
It can't be called that. Anyway, that holiday, you're supposed to, obey all these hospitality rules and show kindness to strangers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They do that to these criminals. And then at the end of the movie, the lady gives birth to a baby boy.
Yeah, boy.
Because they obeyed
so these are basic, Yahweh. These are basically propaganda movies.
You know, Left Behind, the Omega Code,
Megiddo, the Omega Code 2, which we saw in Burbank.
See Me Dance.
Mm-hmm.
All of those movies are absolutely bonkers and crazy. Because they're all post, they're all end of days movies, they're all rapture movies, they're all, you know,
duking it out with Satan movies.
Battling, literally battling Satan and mind controlling people into doing the Lord's will and stuff like that.
The Antichrist walks the earth.
So, you know, I give credit to the people from Sherwood Pictures from this church in Georgia. They've made four movies now with increasing success, like Fireproof, that Kirk Cameron movie about the Christian fireman. Made a huge amount of money. And now this one, Courageous, about the Christian cops, making a huge amount of money.
Well, and these are basically
cost about $500,000 to $1 million to make, and they end up grossing like $30-35 million.
And I say this not in a way to not to insult people of faith, but these are propaganda movies. These are movies that are set out to sell a particular point of view, and it's all about the end point. So the plot doesn't necessarily have to make logical sense because they have, you know, whatever fill in the deity here on your side, and that's why See Me Dance can have this girl suddenly gaining the power of touching people and having them suddenly, you know, become evangelical Christians, you know,
well,
from her touch.
The thing about these movies, Fireproof and Courageous, mm-hmm. is that they don't involve in your face miracles taking place. There's no supernatural stuff going on at all. They are just movies about folks,
mm-hmm.
people who really like to talk about Jesus, mm-hmm. like all the time.
Like the Soul Surfer family.
Like the Soul Surfer family, exactly. Soul Surfer, by comparison, which was not a great movie, but Soul Surfer is a really, really well-made movie about evangelical Christians that is not offensive, genuinely not offensive to people who might not be conservative evangelical Christians. And really, in a way, I mean, neither is Courageous. It's just about these guys who are like, they face, you know, there's lots of plot. This movie is 2 hours and 15 minutes long. It is a bad movie in that the guy still doesn't know how to rein it in.
Is this like a T.D. Jakes movie for white people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Alex Kendrick is the star of this, and he also starred in an earlier Sherwood movie, and he might be in Fireproof, actually, now that I think about it. He's also the director, he's also the writer, he wrote the tie-in books that go along with it, the How to Be Courageous books that go with it. Like, this guy is like a one-man, he's Tyler, Tyler Perry. Yeah, and
without the dress.
And yeah, he doesn't put on a dress ever.
Hallelujah.
But yeah, what he does know how to do is make a movie that appeals to people who want to see the cop pray, or the fireman pray, or anybody pray. They want the people in the movie to talk about Jesus. They want to see movies that have Christian characters in them who are not being mocked, who are not being the butt of jokes, who are not
being questioned
on any level about what they believe. And so,
would you say,
in a way, in a way, this is sort of like the way that first wave of terrible, bad indie gay movies were, where you had all these movies suddenly with gay characters in them. They weren't good movies at all. Like, if you look back on especially like, those movies in the 90s.
Like, after the new queer cinema, you mean? Yeah. Like
the 90s that were just so, like, just bad and cheap.
Lie Down with Dogs.
And, yeah. But what they gave the audiences that came to see them was, oh, look, characters that are gay that aren't being killed. They don't have to kill themselves by the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. They're not the butt of anyone's joke except the jokes that are made by each other.
Right, right.
They get to exist.
Yeah, interesting.
And the way conservative religious people are portrayed in mainstream Hollywood films is offensive to conservative religious people because they're treated like they are jokes or monsters. And so, so I don't begrudge them having their own little niche of cinema
visibility, yeah,
at all. They go ahead and do it. Eventually, someone's going to make a good movie,
right,
with these folks. Now, in my opinion, someone already has made good movies about deeply religious people. You know,
what, Robert Bresson?
Yeah, and The Apostle, that Robert Duvall movie, which is an R-rated film, I think. But I defy any conservative.
You need to see
Christian.
Higher Ground.
I know,
because that's
I know.
Also a really good movie about these people.
I know, but I what I'm saying is that, like, you know, I believe it's out there for those people to have what they want.
Sure.
This movie is clunky and stiff and boring and too full of everything.
What
and,
I was going to ask
and
before
too
was,
easy and everything's obvious and the acting is not good.
What I was going to ask before was, yeah, are these post 9/11 movies? Since they've got one about firemen and one about cops, like,
oh, that too. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because in conservative evangelical Christianity, there's a pervasive idea that masculinity is under attack. That men themselves are sort of endangered. And so these hyper-masculine careers, like firefighter, police officer, right, are held in high esteem. Soldier, you know.
It's very promise-keeper.
They're held in high esteem, yeah. And so, it's a, you know, because, you know, women are getting too powerful and the gays are, you know, worming their way into people's, you know,
destroying
good,
traditional
good
marriage.
Graces. Yeah. And so it's a thing where, you know, these old school kind of men are getting their due in these films. I don't think I disliked it as much as Gray. We saw it together on like a Monday morning at the AMC out in Burbank. And
so you found it hacky, but
big,
not despicable.
It's hacky, but not despicable. And it was a lot of folks at this movie.
On a Monday morning?
10:30 a.m. on a Monday morning. Yeah, a lot of people in the theater. So we were sitting there whispering back and forth to each other and trying to be quiet, not to be, you know, offensive. But, you know, like at the end of the movie, there's this big Bible verse that flashes on the screen and people hooted and hollered and cheered. Yeah. Like, I'm talking to the audience.
No. Yeah. It's like when we saw Megiddo, the Omega Code 2, and everybody, there was a standing O when they defeat the Antichrist.
Yeah. So, again, you know, the audience for these movies, they really need these movies. You know, they need them to exist so that they can say, look, there's a movie now. It's kind of like Christian rock, right? Okay, so like Christian rock in the early 80s,
right?
Just cheesy, terrible music. But it felt like a thing that was really valuable to the people who wanted to hear it because they were like, ah, finally, rock music that sounds like rock music, but it has lyrics about God.
Right.
You know, and now, of course, you've got, you know, all these crossover bands that have, you know, they're hugely successful bands, and they also are all full of Christian Jars of Clay or whoever they were back in the 90s. And Creed or whatever.
Wasn't Sixpence None the Richer?
Sixpence None the Richer, yeah. I think they had a hit, right? Didn't they have a hit?
Probably.
Yeah.
I just like saying Sixpence.
I think Evanescence was a Christian band at first. Or
maybe, yeah. DC Talk.
Yeah. Katy Perry even. Well, but she, I think she was forced to put out a Christian
record. She was a preacher's kid. She was about as into it as Sam Phillips.
No, Sam Phillips was into it.
Okay.
She was down for it, but then they, you know. Her story, the contemporary, you know, like the adult contemporary singer-songwriter lady, Sam Phillips, she was a Christian pop star in the 80s. She was sort of like the antidote to Amy Grant at the time, I remember. She was like the cool Amy Grant. You know? but she broke her contract.
Right.
Like she, in the mid 80s, she was like, you know what? I'm sick of this. Like,
we're done.
I gotta go do something else. And she broke her contract. And then it was as though she had cursed Jesus just by breaking her contract and getting out of it and going off and doing her own thing. But yeah, well, she's really great. You know, she's cool and smart, and there's nothing, you know, one dimensional.
No, I know. You're a big fan.
I'm a fan. Yeah. No, I'm a fan of her.
I like her stuff too, actually.
We got to get out of here. We got to go to Gourmet Donut Shop.
Okay. DVD picks real quick. What do you got?
I don't know. We have a gourmet donut shop appointment in 20 minutes. Okay. And we can't be late.
Okay, okay. My DVD pick
this week. I don't care about DVDs.
Shush. Donuts. My DVD pick this week is Tanner 88. Yes, I know it was made for television, but it's directed by Robert Altman, written by Gary Trudeau of Doonesbury. And it's all set during the political primaries. And they actually shot it during the political primaries of 1988. So, like, Tanner, the fake politician candidate, is interacting with real candidates like Pat Robertson and Bob Dole, and I forget who else. But it's really smart, really funny, one of the best American things about politics ever. And so if you liked Ides of March and are hungry for more political stuff, check out Tanner 88. And also, years later, they did a sequel called Tanner on Tanner, where his daughter, Cynthia Nixon...
Tanner on Tanner action?
No, it's Tanner's played by Michael Murphy, and his daughter's played by Cynthia Nixon. And so years later, she becomes a documentarian and makes a movie about him, and that's what Tanner on Tanner is. They were both directed by Robert Altman. They're both available from the Criterion Collection. And so to wrap up real quick, we are on Twitter at Linoleum Cast. You can like us at Facebook, the Linoleum Knife Podcast. Follow us on, if you are a Get Glue person, you can check into us. We're under TV shows for no apparent reason. If you like the show, tell your friends, go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review and tell other people that you like the show. Dave can be heard on KCRW's Unfictional. You can stream it. Okay.
You need to slow down when you talk about this because it's very important.
Okay, donuts can wait now. I see.
KCRW.org
/unfictional.
Or you could just find Unfictional on the site. It's a storytelling show. It's sort of like their own This American Life. I've been on it like 3 times, and now I'm on it for a 4th time. And the name of the episode is...
Your Future in Sales.
Your Future in Sales. And it's about the time that when I was a teenager, my family got involved selling Amway. And so you should go there and listen to it and tell me how great I am.
And you can do that by email. We are at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Drop us a line. Tell us what you think of the show. Ask us questions. Tell Dave he's great. He needs to hear that from people. It's a weakness. Coming up in November, I believe it's on the 22nd, from Code Red DVD. stop with the Pat Code Red DVD will be presenting the Canadian exploitation film Caged Men, and Dave and I did our very first commentary track on that one. We'll tell you more about that as it comes up.
It's dumb.
And I've got some cool stuff happening in December around my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, but we'll get into that more as we get closer. In the meantime, check out our friends in the podcast universe, Popcorn Mafia, the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Blowhard, the podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid, and Glitter in the Garbage. We thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Shadows of the Night!
We're done. Turn it off.
We're running with the shadows.
Are you singing into the mic?
Yes.
Turn it off. Goodbye.
Bye.